Argument, United States versus Flores Lopez. Mr. Garlow.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jonathan Garlow. On behalf of the appellant, Abel Flores Lopez. The warrantless search of Mr. Lopez's cell phone violated Mr. Lopez's Fourth Amendment rights. And the fruit of that...
What kind of cell phone was it?
The record is unclear as to...
What does that mean?
Your Honor, I'm appointing counsel...
Why isn't that in the record? I don't understand. Why is that? That's the most elementary fact you could have about the case, what the cell phone was.
There was an evidentiary hearing at which point the special...
Were you involved in that?
I was not, Your Honor. I've been appointed on appeal. During that evidentiary...
Ridiculous.
During
that
evidentiary...
gets left out.
The fruit of that illegal search should not have been presented to the jury for two reasons.
But there's nothing in the record about that?
There was an evidentiary hearing in which Agent Holbrook, Matt Holbrook, testified about the search of the cell phone. And he described the way in which he manipulated...
And he never said what the cell phone was?
He described the way...
Nobody asked him?
There's no questions in the record reflecting that. He did describe the way in which he manipulated the cell phone. He flipped it open, I believe, and toggled to the main menu in which there's a My Information option. He clicked on that option, scrolled down, and that's where he was able to obtain Mr. Lopez's cell phone number.
The ability does exist for the content of iPhones, for example, to be remotely erased. Why doesn't that possibility at least justify the sort of search that the police conducted in this case?
That is an argument that the government put forward, and I have, a couple of responses to that. First of all, in the Belton, the Chimmel, and...
We don't know if it's an iPhone.
That's correct, Your Honor. But assuming that it were...
Why are we assuming that? I don't understand.
Because I asked the question.
Even if that were the case, the Belton, the Chimmel, and the Gantt cases focus on the defendant's ability to remove or destroy...
What's the evidence about remote wiping?
The evidence in this case is extraordinarily weak. The government's...
What is the evidence about remote wiping?
The government attorney during the aforementioned evidentiary hearing inquired about the possibility of remote wiping. Does that exist?
He inquired about the possibility?
The government's attorney.
What do you mean, inquired? He asked someone. What, the police officer?
Yes, Special Agent Matt Holbrook during the evidentiary hearing that we discussed.
What did the agent say?
He acknowledged the possibility that technology existed.
I mean, did he explain how that's done?
Not at all.
What kind of cell phones you can do it with?
Agent Holbrook's testimony...
What do you need in order to be able to do it? What kind of technology, what kind of equipment do you need for remote wiping?
No such evidence was admitted.
Okay.
Even aside from that, Your Honor, I would note that in the situation of a car or a laptop, scenarios we discussed in our briefs, of course the possibility is that someone remotely could destroy evidence. But even notwithstanding that remote possibility...
Well, there's always, of course, there are always these hackers. They can do anything, right?
Yes.
But that wasn't the...
No evidence.
It's a hacker that they're worried about. It's an accomplice.
And right? There was no evidence in the record to suggest that there was any such accomplice here.
If nothing else, however, why wasn't it reasonable to search a cell phone to determine the telephone number assigned to that phone? I mean, why would that be different from searching his wallet to look for his identification?
Well, I think the Gantt court answers that. And again, we have to go back to first principles, which is there's no warrant. So you have to find an exception to the warrant requirement, and here the government has relied on the search incident to arrest exception. And under Gantt, the court says, okay, focus on the two implications or the two rationales underlying that exception, and that is the prevention of an arrestee obtaining a weapon or the prevention of the arrestee obtaining, destroying the evidence. And here, Mr. Lopez had been arrested. The phone had been seized. It was in the officer's hands. He had been placed in handcuffs. And by Special Agent Holbrook's own admission at trial, Mr. Lopez could not obtain the cell phone. It was outside of his reach. And recall what the Supreme Court says about the implication of a cell phone or an object being outside the
Well, but the what I'm trying to think of here is, like, for instance, why would it be materially different from reviewing, you know, an address book upon arrest, which courts have said is reasonable? I mean, could Mr. Lopez have said, give me my address book back. You can't look at my contacts.
Your Honor, and as we acknowledged previously, of course, the record is a little unclear as to the type of cell phone here. But a cell phone is not an address book. It's so much more.
You know, why did the government want... I don't understand. The government wanted his cell phone number?
That's correct.
What did they want that for?
That evidence was submitted to the jury to rebut testimony that Mr. Lopez had nothing to do with the conspiracy with which he was charged.
No, I understand why it might be evidence of trial. Why, when they arrested him, did they want to... What was the urgency about finding out what his cell phone number was?
Your Honor, there was no urgency. In fact, Agent Hope testified that he could have gotten a search warrant. He just chose not to. And in fact, the facts show that the police on the scene left the scene, went and got a search warrant for the garage at which Mr. Lopez had been arrested, came back and began the search all the while Mr. Lopez was in handcuffs. So they plainly could have done the same thing for the cell phone. They just chose not to. And as Gant shows, the search incident to arrest exception does not permit them to do so. I also want to touch on a second reason why the search was illegal, and that was the search is not a cell phone is not a container. The government relies on cases drawing the analogy to pagers, but a cell phone is not a pager. They're very different technologies and different privacy interests involved. A cell phone can store a person's social security number. It can store a person's work emails and contacts, which itself could contain trade secrets or commercially sensitive information. It could contain bank accounts or passwords, all sorts of information that can't be stored on a pager. So those cases don't apply. In addition, those cases, for the most part, are decided prior to Gant. Another reason why those cases don't apply. I see that my time is up for my opening argument. I'd like to reserve the remainder of time for rebuttal unless the court has any
questions. Okay, thank you, Mr. Garlow. Mr. Minkler?
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, counsel, Josh Minkler, appearing on behalf of the United States of America, and I was the trial counsel.
What kind of cell phone was this?
This was a typical flip cell phone, Your Honor. The cell phone itself, this was a trial, so the cell phone was, excuse me?
Was it an iPhone?
It's not an iPhone. It was a what's called a burn phone, which is resold by Sprint, in this case another provider. You open it up, you can dial numbers. It has stored numbers, but it doesn't have emails, text messages, those types of things.
It looks like this.
A lot like that one, exactly.
Exhibit A.
Well, this cell phone was introduced in the trial. Judge Lawrence had the cell phone in his hands when he was making the ruling.
So what is the cell phone again?
It's what I would call a flip phone, much like Judge Bauer's phone.
What's
that he
brand?
Has. Sprint what? Is the provider. I'm not
Sprint
sure.
Sprint is not the that's the phone company. What is the cell phone brand?
I believe it was a Motorola phone, Judge. Now, the record would be
so
clear.
Motorola makes smartphones. Is this a smartphone?
It's not a smartphone.
A stupid phone.
Yes, correct.
Only the lawyers are smart, or the judge.
Correct.
Now, why did the government want the number?
In this case, what had occurred is immediately before the two defendants had been arrested, there was a phone call from Mr. Santana to his source of supply. Mr. Santana told his source of supply, I counted the money. The money's good. Bring the stuff. Then 2 minutes later, Mr. Flores Lopez shows up in a white truck in possession of three cell phones. The agent wanted to determine whether one of those three cell phones was the one that received the contact or received the telephone call from Mr. Santana. And as it turned out, it was one of those calls.
What was the urgency of that?
To make, number one, to make sure they had the right individual, because Mr. Flores did not have the drugs on him, and to make sure there was not another individual that was actually the one that was going to bring the drugs.
Why should we treat a cell phone as a container? It seems like an awfully crude and inapt analogy, given the range of sensitive information that phones can see.
And I hear what you're saying, but in this specific case, this cell phone would be much closer to the Ortiz case, which we're talking about a pager. That this phone was capable of making ingoing and outgoing calls and storing information such as an address book.
Yeah, but I haven't understood yet. You haven't explained. What is the urgency of this? Now, they had presumably probable cause to arrest him.
Yes.
Okay, so they've arrested him.
He's at the scene.
Now, why do they have to? What's the urgency? I mean, I understand the cell phone and the numbers on it and so on are perfectly appropriate evidence at his trial. But what's the urgency about the police finding out his number? Why do they have to find that out immediately rather than arrest him, put him in jail, and then get a warrant to search his cell phones?
The telephone number is what they found, and in searching his phone that was on his person, they found no contact whatsoever.
You're not answering my question. What is the urgency when they have probable cause to arrest? What is the urgency of finding out what his phone number is?
The critical piece of evidence in this case for the agency.
No, not the evidence. That's at the trial. The question is, why do they have to find out the cell phone number immediately rather than jailing him because they have probable cause and getting a warrant?
There is absolutely no reason that they need to find out the cell phone number immediately. What they do need to find out immediately, and what they were looking for, is who did the co-defendant contact 2 minutes before this white pickup truck showed up, which they did determine by searching the three cell phones in this case, one of the which demonstrated.
You've lost me. I thought the government's position here was that all it wanted was the cell phone number.
That is all that was introduced into evidence in the trial. What the government wanted was to know
it takes the cell phones and it looks in them, and what is it? So this is what it's doing before it gets a search warrant.
Correct.
So what is it looking for?
It's looking for what phone was contacted by the co-defendant 1 minute prior to the arrest.
That's complicated. The defendant, Flores Lopez, on his cell phone, what are they looking for on his cell phone?
Whether or not that cell phone was contacted by Mr. Santana, the co-defendant, 1 minute before the arrest, when Mr. Santana placed a telephone call saying, I've counted the money, it's good.
So they have Flores Lopez's cell phone.
Yes.
And they want to see who has called him recently? Is that what
they want? No, they want to see specifically if the co-defendant, Mr. Santana, has contacted him 1 minute ago. Which would be in the inbox.
So they know Santana's phone number or what?
They know Santana, and they have a recording of Santana placing an outgoing call saying, bring the stuff, I counted the money, and it's good.
Okay, so they want to find out they look on Flores Lopez's phone to find out whether Santana just called him.
Correct. Okay. And the answer to that was
okay,
no.
Now what is the urgency of that? Is it that they're looking for Santana, they haven't arrested him yet, or what?
It has nothing to do with Santana. It's determining, was Mr. Flores the one that brought the stuff? Because presumably,
it has nothing to do with Santana, if it has only to do, it's only evidence against Flores Lopez.
Correct.
Then I'm back to my original point. They had probable cause to arrest him. They arrest him. What was the urgency about finding out what was on his phone. There's no urgency. It's important that they find out for the trial. But this, it doesn't seem to be any urgency.
I would.
When you look at these warrantless searches connected with arrests, there's always has to be some rationale. So the traditional one was, you know, the police are protecting themselves. He might grab a weapon. That's certainly fine. But also it might be, you know, evidence is going to be destroyed. There are all sorts of reasons. All I want is a reason.
Sure.
Why there was some urgency.
And I would respectfully disagree with you, Your Honor. I think it's
important. No, you just tell me. You tell me whether there was urgency.
There is urgency. They had to
what
one.
What is the urgency?
The urgency is, one, at the time when they're making the arrest, they have to make sure they have the right guy. That is the person that received the call.
But they have probable cause to arrest him.
And two, if they look at the...
I don't understand one.
Sure.
They have probable cause. They don't need additional evidence.
And then, secondly, if they look at all three phones and say, this is not the guy that received the incoming call.
That's your first point again. You're saying is these cell phones might have had exculpatory evidence.
I wouldn't say exculpatory evidence.
That's
I would say
just what you said.
No, it's evidence important for the agents at the scene to know, is there another individual out there that is bringing the drugs? Do we have the right person?
Unless I'm very much mistaken, you're talking in total circles.
Okay.
You said first that this is irrelevant to Santana. The only reason they needed to look in his phone was to see whether he was the person they were after.
But maybe I'm
you
not.
You also said there was probable cause to arrest him independently of that.
Yes.
And I get back to my question. Why couldn't they arrest him, take him to jail, then get a warrant for his to look in his cell phone? If they discovered that he was the wrong person, they'd release him, right?
Yes.
Why don't they do it that way?
Well, by explanation, and maybe I haven't explained the facts.
You don't want to arrest somebody who isn't guilty, is what you're talking about.
Well, of course not, Judge. But my this
a sterling position to take.
Yeah, Santana Cabrera made an outgoing call, if I may finish, saying, "Bring the stuff." Abel Flores Lopez shows up in a truck. In a white truck, they arrest him. The methamphetamine is not in the white truck. Now we're trying to determine, is this the guy that was supposed to bring the stuff? We look at his cell phone. There's nothing. We look at one of the cell phones in the truck, and that is the call that received the incoming call. So we knew that we had the recipient of that call. Now,
you're just repeating what
right.
you said.
Now, assume otherwise. Assume that they look at all three phones, and let me just finish quickly, and he's not the guy that received the call.
Right.
There is no methamphetamine.
Right. There's no problem.
Then we're looking for a third person or waiting for a third person who we don't know to bring the methamphetamine. That makes it important to the agents at that time.
I don't think it's in your brief, but that's fine.
Okay.
Now you're saying there was urgency, because if it turned out that Flores Lopez was not the courier or whatever, then... they're missing somebody, and they have to look for him or await him or something like that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's exactly.
That's a good argument. I mean, was that made to the judge?
Well, and I don't want to take up too much time, but this goes to my original procedural point. This was at the third day of a four-day trial. This wasn't at a motion to suppress hearing, and the evidentiary hearing we're talking about was, well, the jury was outside. Nobody was really prepared to extend this, and so I had Special Agent Holbrook say, because the fact of the matter was at the time, and I'm going to make it brief, that this evidentiary hearing was held, we did know who the person was, and we did have that piece of evidence. So it answered your question, which I should have done in the first place, no, that was not made to Judge Lawrence. Thank you.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
The court to affirm the judgment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Winkler. Okay, Mr. Carlo, what do you have to say? So what's your response to Mr. Minkler?
Two points I'd like to make. First, in response to the immediate line of questioning with Mr. Minkler, I think Mr. Minkler just acknowledged the importance of the illegal search of Mr. Lopez's phone, and that is if that search had turned up that Mr. Lopez was not the person who had been called, then they had gotten the wrong guy. And that shows exactly why evidence resulting from this.
That's not responsive to his point. His point was they have to find out whether they really have the right person, because if they don't, then they've got to, you know, they've got to make a quick adjustment. They have to wait for someone else, or they have to look for someone else, right? That's his argument, that there was urgency. And
first of all, I'll acknowledge what the court has already pointed out, which was that it was not an argument either submitted before the trial court or this court in the briefs. But notwithstanding that fact.
Well, as he said, this came up unexpectedly during the trial, so I don't think I can fault them for that.
But more substantively, the court had, the police had a confidential informant along with Mr. Santana, who they were listening to Mr. Lopez on the phone. They used evidence from that phone call to later identify Mr. Lopez. So, notwithstanding the phone number, they had probable cause to arrest.
What do you think they were looking for on the phone?
Your Honor, I wouldn't want to speculate. All we know is that they obtained the phone number of Mr. Flores. Whether there was additional searching on the phone, it's unclear, but it sounds like that very well may have occurred. The last point I want to make to the court is simply the court has inquired about whether this was a smartphone or a dumb phone. I point out that even a dumb phone can take pictures, can send text messages, can do a lot of things that a pager, an address book can't do, that are still akin to a laptop. But even notwithstanding that, obviously an important part of this court's role is providing guidance to the police and in its Fourth Amendment determinations. And I think it would be a difficult line for the police to draw if the police needs to determine whether this is a smartphone, how smart, dumb phone, how dumb, before it knows the scope of the search it can conduct incident to arrest. So I would suggest to the court that that may not be the best line to draw between a smartphone or a dumb phone. And as technology evolves, I think we can see where phones are going, and it makes sense to draw that line where we assume they're smartphones as opposed to assume they're dumb phones. That I appreciate the court's time and ask the court to reverse Mr. Lopez's conviction.
Thank you very much, Mr. Garland. You were appointed, were you not?